He's grown a lot since we first got him here, figuring it all out, and I like his progress. He's attacked it. I mean, we talk about where he started and where he's at now. It was completely different level. And you can tell by the respect that he gets from the guys and the respect he has in return for the veteran player. So it's they've accepted it in there, and he's worked hard for to gain all that respect.
Chiefs head coach Andy Reid talking about Mecole Hardman, the rookie, who's looked good in training camp and preseason games so far, meshing with the veterans. And the Chiefs get ready for their third preseason game of the season. This one is the one where starters play the most. You won't see the starters play hardly at all, if at all, on Thursday at Green Bay, a quick turnaround as a final preseason game in Lambeau. And I'm sure you won't see Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes lace them up in that game. Chiefs hosting the 49ers coming up tomorrow night with pregame at 6 o'clock, kickoff at 7 on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas. Before we get into more Chiefs talk, local sports information, we can tell you that 2 weeks from today, Dusty, high school football returns to the airwaves.
Yes, it does. We're looking forward to that. Kitty Country 94 will have Lakeside at Thunder Ridge and Bullitt at Fairburn, Nebraska on Z96.3 through the lake. So we're going to do a lot of prep as we get ready for that. And starting next week, we're going to hope to talk with some coaches on how everything's going so far in practices after they've had about a week to get things underway and see what everything's looking like. And then a week from tonight as well, they're going to start having a new thing in Kansas, which is a football jamboree where schools from the area can actually scrimmage against other schools instead of just having inter-squad scrimmages. So we're going to tell you a lot more about that coming up next week as well and give you an idea of where everybody's at. I know at Clifton Clyde, it's Clifton Clyde, Hanover, Osborne, and Wakefield. Somebody's like, what, Bama wouldn't come or what? Like, with Clifton, Clyde, Hanover, and Osborne, you know? It's like, man, those are 3 8-man powers that are going to be hanging out in Clyde next Friday night. But we'll tell you more about all that coming up next week about the jamborees and the new thing that's happening in the state here this year. And all the other teams are working hard in practices, getting ready for competition. Some beginning at the end of next week, but most of it all will be that next week, that same week that football starts.
And we'll have football locker room chats coming up soon again.
Locker room chats. They'll start that Wednesday and Thursday right before the start of the season. So that'd be the 4th and 5th that we'll have our first locker room chats on. And we'll talk with all the area coaches that we normally do. And we're looking forward to that as well.
And then we'll preview all the sports that are taking place in our area beginning next week, right?
Yep. We'll get some coaches and see how everything's going. And, yeah, we'll give you an idea of how things are going to go for those teams. Volleyball, and we got some girls tennis teams that we'll be keeping track of, and cross country as well.
Broadcasting schedule is available. You can go to katycountry94.com, ncksports.com, and see when we may be in your town. And for the whole rundown of what we have to offer, of course, Fridays we have a full 6 hours of coverage almost. We start 5:40 with the Football Express, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable. 6:30 pregame show, 7 o'clock kickoff. And then after that, the local high school scoreboard show, brought to you by State Farm Insurance. Marty Walters, Osborne, and Kevin Hewitt of Beloit, the agents that are sponsoring that one this year. So we look forward to having the local scores that you care about and hearing from coaches after the games and hear from the coaches before the games with the Football Express, brought to you by our good friends at Cunningham Telephone and Cable. So it should be a fun year covering high school football and all the sports. We don't just cover football. We do cover the other sports. It's just that we don't do play-by-play of tennis. We've done occasionally a little bit of volleyball, usually when they get to state, if the team makes state, and so forth and so on. So, but we still have it included in our sports, and Dusty talks to various coaches and previews of other sports, especially beginning next week. So look forward to all of that. All right, the Chiefs' third preseason game is tomorrow night against the San Francisco 49ers. BJ Kissel of Chiefs.com tells us 5 players that we need to be watching out for tomorrow night against San Francisco. Okay. Computer is having a few problems right now, so I might not be able to play that for you. Okay. Because I noticed it's just been dragging all of a sudden when I've been trying to do something. I don't know if there's too many tabs open or what, but it is moving a little bit slower. So let's try this. Andrew Wiley, Cam Irving. Oh, now it's going to work. No, it's not. Okay. Pause. Stop. This is great radio. Cut it out. Chewing out my computer on the air. Good stuff. Okay, so now I think I got it figured out. Andy Reid has a bit of an issue, and it's not a bad issue to have, and that is he has more starting offensive linemen than spots available to start. He talks about 2 guys that have been battling out for one of the positions offensive line, Andrew Wiley and Cam Irving?
What we did was, that's a good question. You know, we had Wiley there, and we feel like both of the guys are starters, so you just don't have enough spots. So we let Wiley work some at tackle this week, put Cam in at the guard this week, gave him some shots there, and I mean, listen, they're all going to play. I mean, that's how it's worked out here. So you can't have enough of those guys. And like I said, those two we consider starters, and we feel comfortable. We want to make sure we got Cam some good condensed work in their guard. So he'll get some work there Saturday night.
So both of them are going to see some action, and odds are you're not going to go through an entire NFL season without any injuries to your offensive line. You need depth on your offensive line. And that's one of the things I think the Chiefs, one of their strengths this year, is they are deep at a lot of different positions. And offensive line, they're in pretty decent shape there. We know running back, and we also know certainly wide receiver. And how do I know the Chiefs are so deep at wide receiver? Because everybody talks about Tyreek Hill, everybody talking about Mecole Hardman, and then there's a guy that everybody's forgetting about who was a nice addition last year, and Sammy Watkins. Watkins talks about this talented receiving core that lost one for the season to Marcus Kemp, but still pretty good.
I think it's a combination of all. We have so many different guys that can do just about anything. You have D-Rob, physical guy, myself, Kemp, who probably might miss the season, but so many other guys that come in, and we have speed, power, agility. We have everything that a wide receiver needs in our room.
Well, they have a lot of speed, that's for sure, and they can make players miss, and Watkins says the group keeps improving.
We got to keep getting better. We just got to continue to keep doing what coach wants us to do and keep detailing everything and being on the same page and not getting complacent, because we got a lot of guys that can go out there and make plays and run around, catch balls. We just got to continue to hone in every week, every day, and focus on it now. We can't look ahead and think about the playoffs or anything in that sort. Just focus on it now and continue to come to work every day.
That's all you can do. It's a process. And I know a lot of Chiefs fans, including myself, want to fast forward to January because you were so close last year, and there's no guarantee you're going to get back. But if you think last year was a tough way to end the season for the Chiefs, think about how the Saints season has ended the last 2 years. The Minneapolis Miracle, when they had that game won, and then last year, some bad officiating, and had a pass interference been called, they very well could have beat the Rams in the NFC Championship game. They've had to wait now basically three. They're going to have to wait about 3 years to get where they want to get some of those guys. And, of course, it's never the same team. That might be your one shot. And I don't know why it sticks in my head, but I saw it on social media. I saw the video when the Chiefs had beat the Colts in the playoffs last year. Justin Houston was one of the leaders. In the locker room, he was like, don't be satisfied with this. You know, this could be guys' last shot or to get to the Super Bowl. And then, of course, D Ford isn't offside. The Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl. Justin Houston now not a part of the team. Now he's with the Colts. Andrew Luck's got injury problems. Justin Houston may never get that close ever again the rest of his life. And so for fans, it's easy. I'm a Chiefs fan my whole life. It's like you've been a member of the team for your entire life.
Yeah.
You never retire. But for a player, you're like, oh, well, as a fan, you say, well, we didn't win last year, but we just love this big window. Tell that to Eric Berry, Justin Houston. D Ford went to a team that's 4-12, San Francisco 49ers, although they should be improved.
Yeah.
Guys get hurt. Guys get cut. Guys get traded. It's a different team. I mean, for crying out loud, all you got to do is look at the defense for the Chiefs, how much different that personnel looks like, and the changing of coaches. So while it's easy for us as fans to say, well, there's a huge window. Yeah, you know, we lost last year. It really bothered me. But, you know, the future's bright. We've got a window where we're going to win Super Bowls. It's not the way for the individual players. That's not how they look at it. I don't think Patrick Mahomes goes, okay, I got 10 years. I got plenty of time to get one. Because he's playing for his teammates. He wants to win a championship as soon as possible. Not just championships. And so your goal when you go on the field is to always, at that level, is to win a championship. It should be. And if it's not, well, then you got probably some guys that aren't in for the betterment of the good of the team. They're maybe more into their own ego. Individually, it's just all about making their money, which there are players that are that way. And then, hey, if we win, that's a nice little dish of dessert on the side. But this Chiefs team, as Danny Welniak told us, sideline reporter of the Chiefs, she was on a couple weeks with us on the show. Brandon Daly came over, coach from the Patriots. He's a coach of the defense, assistant coach under defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo, said, if you're not here to win a Super Bowl, why are you here? That's the expectations you have to have. The Chiefs haven't really had those expectations. I mean, they have and they haven't. You know what I'm saying? Because you got to win a playoff game before you can really think you can win a Super Bowl. Finally, they did that last year.
Yeah, they have those expectations, and some of the media members that think that if they just kept going with the status quo with Alex Smith the way it was, that it was going to happen. And it's like, we all knew here, it's like, you got to have something else. You got to do something different. Even if you do still have Alex Smith, you're going to have to do something different.
Right.
And so then Mahomes comes in, and now you feel that. You feel that every year probably that you have Mahomes coming in, that you're a team that's going to be vying and fighting for a championship.
Right.
And you didn't feel that way before.
No.
And before you got that franchise quarterback that actually came out and proved that he was that guy, you didn't have it. And now you do. You're feeling pretty good about it. But like you were talking about, though, all these guys got to do this right now. I mean, you're not guaranteed the next day. Even Patrick Mahomes is not guaranteed tomorrow if, you know, after this game, you know, coming up tomorrow. Maybe, you know, you don't want anything to happen, but you're not guaranteed anything.
No.
So you got to come out with that same focus all the time and say, we got to do this now. We got to win now. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may in the future. Let's figure it out, and the win now attitude has to be there. And especially like with what happened last year, I mean, you were this close. There's no other goal this year other than to win a Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what it has to be in this, in the professional level. When you got that close, that's the only thing I'm thinking
about.
And
you got the best quarterback in the league right now, arguably.
Yeah.
MVP. Yeah. You should be, your goal should be to get to the Super Bowl and win it all. No question. All right, let's see if I got it working now. Five observations of BJ Kissel at KCChiefs.com. Five players to watch tomorrow night.
The Chiefs host the 49ers on Saturday night at Arrowhead Stadium in the ever-important third preseason game of the year, which will see the starters get their most action of the preseason, and for many of them, their last action before the team heads to Jacksonville to open up the regular season. Here are five players to keep an eye on when the Chiefs take the field. First up, Patrick Mahomes. And while that might just sound like an obvious one, the storyline here is that Chiefs coach Andy Reid has made several comments over the past week about the first team offense needing to be better than they were against the Steelers. Whether it's via turnovers, penalties, or just overall execution, expect Mahomes and company to take that message to heart. And while they still aren't game planning and the play calls overall are still going to be pretty vanilla, that doesn't mean a few strikes here and there won't be welcomed. Next up, cornerback Herb Miller. A virtual unknown for many outside of the Chiefs building until he was signed after a solid tryout during rookie minicamp. Miller has been one of the bright spots of training camp and the preseason thus far, picking off a pass back in week one, then following that up with a good week of practice, then forcing a fumble against the Steelers and making some plays down the field in coverage. The third guy to keep an eye on is tight end Nick Kizer, a solid inline blocker who spent part of last year, his rookie year, on the Ravens practice squad, and is now getting used to the way Andy Reid likes to utilize his tight ends in the passing game. Then we've got a pair of players to watch and back up defensive ends Tano Passanio and Breeland Speaks, who both had great ends to their training camps and solid performances in week one of the preseason, but after last week's game, Reid mentioned he needs more from his second team pass rush, hence a spotlight on Speaks and Passanio. How do they respond? We'll see. And finally, the last set of players to watch are the new faces who haven't seen preseason action yet. In cornerback Morris Claiborne, offensive lineman Jeff Allen, and receiver DeAnthony Thomas. But Allen and Thomas know the scheme, having spent multiple seasons with the Chiefs already. And Claiborne has been practicing for a couple of weeks after joining the Chiefs, but he has yet to see any game action. Will this be the week? That's something I asked Reid about on Tuesday.
We'll see on that, yeah. We haven't even got there yet. Yeah, I'm not that far along in this, so we're kind of getting through all this, and then we'll see.
In any case, Saturday night at Arrowhead will be the place to be as we get to see one last final tune-up for most of the starters before the regular season begins on the road against the Jaguars.
And there's always that fear when you have star players like the Chiefs do, Kelce, Hill, Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Mahomes, just don't get hurt. We don't even care how well you play. Just don't get hurt. Last night, Cam Newton injured his foot. He hadn't played all preseason, coming off-season shoulder surgery, scrambling, hurt his foot, did not return, had to be helped to the locker room. There's an article, a national article, today saying this is why preseason is meaningless. Why does anybody play their starters at all in the preseason? Why even take a chance? I think there's some value to playing guys, obviously, a little bit in the preseason, but I do think it's becoming more and more watered down. You're seeing, it used to be that your quarterback would play some the first game, second game, third game, and then the fourth game they'd play the most. It used to be that way. Mm-hmm. Now it's changed so much to where you don't even play the first two preseason games, and then you're going to play a little bit in the third game, and you're not playing at all in the fourth. That's how far it's come, yeah. Which means you're watching backup quarterbacks paying good money to go to an NFL preseason game. Now, it's your choice to pay that money. If I'm going to pay that type of money to go to a Chiefs game, I'm not paying to watch Kyle Shermer throw passes to guys that won't be on this team. That's just not what I'm going to pay my money for. And I'm not going to pay $40 for parking. You know, to me, the Chiefs and any NFL team, you're not getting a full product. You should charge half-price tickets and half-price parking, half-price concessions, all the way across the board. That's my opinion. But if people are, I don't know if I say crazy enough, but if that's what they want to do, and they want to spend the money, who am I to tell a business owner, you can't charge that, and people are willing to pay it?
Yeah. Definitely half-price parking and tickets for sure. Like this,
the parking part's ridiculous. Yeah. I don't know why anybody accepts that, but people pay it.
Yeah.
But that's the fear when you go into a game tomorrow night where the offense is supposed to start, play maybe a half. We shall see how it all works out. You're worried about injuries. Just get out of it unscathed because you know the top dogs, top players on this team and most NFL teams are not going to play the fourth and final preseason game. And you talk about money really thrown away. I shouldn't say thrown away. If you choose to do that, that's fine. Everybody has money they throw away, whether they buy alcohol, whether they buy cigarettes, yeah. Whether they, you know, go on a vacation, some people would say, whatever. Everybody has a judge. Everybody has an opinion on, well, I wouldn't spend my money on that. I wouldn't buy a $2.50 ice cream cone or something like that. You know, it's not your money. So you can do what you want and say what you want, but I could criticize somebody else for the way they spend their money, technically. Now it's taxpayers' money that our government's spending. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
but the one preseason game you really don't want to go to, quite honestly, is the last one.
Not at all.
Don't go to the last one. No, you're better off going to the first one than you are going to the last one.
Yeah. Luckily, that's not an Arrowhead, so Chiefs fans don't have to make
last
that decision. But other teams, yeah. If you want to go to Lambeau Field, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
That'd be about the only reason. If you're going to a historical place, maybe you can get a cheaper ticket.
Yeah.
You might do that.
Yeah.
But other than that, that's the only if you've never been to Arrowhead and you can find like a $15 ticket right. or something on
if your business, your work schedule is the only time all year long, you can go watch a Chiefs game. Yeah, I get it, you know. But all in all,
if you want to see the Chiefs,
right,
I wouldn't even go to the third preseason game.
I wouldn't either.
If you want to see the Chiefs at Arrowhead, tomorrow night's the night to go.
Right.
If it's preseason and you can't make it at all during the season,
right.
You can find a good ticket. And I wouldn't like encourage you to not go or anything
right.
like that. But this, if you can get in the regular season, go ahead and do that.
Yeah. I would encourage you not to pay full price.
Yeah. Don't be buying a $70 ticket, $60, $70 ticket.
I'm with you on that. Other NFL news, Patrick Chung, a Patriots safety, indicted for cocaine possession. That's a important player on the Patriot defense. Ezekiel Elliott has an offer from the Cowboys on the table that would make him the second highest paid running back behind Todd Gurley. We'll see if Elliott accepts that or not. I'm guessing he's probably not. I think if I'm Ezekiel Elliott, I'll say I'm the best running back. I'm the most important running back in this league in regards to my team, which I think he is. I mean, the Rams, Todd Gurley was banged up last year. They still went 13-3 and made it to the Super Bowl. And I still think the Rams would have won the Super Bowl had Todd Gurley been his electric self, but he wasn't really right the whole playoffs.
Mm.
But Ezekiel, the Rams can still be good without him. The Cowboys, without Ezekiel Elliott, they're just a different team. I mean, it starts with Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
So I think they'll get something done there. Melvin Gordon's still holding out with the Chargers. One last thing on the Chiefs. Tomorrow night, what are you looking at? Because to me, I'm going to be more tomorrow night. I'm not really going to be worried too much about the offense other than don't get hurt. I'm going to be really zoned in more on the defense because some of these defensive starters, like a Frank Clark, a Tyrann Mathieu, these guys might play more.
Mathieu might not play
at
all.
He might not play at all with the shoulder thing, which is smart. But like Frank Clark, I want to see Frank Clark play.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him play much so far.
Exactly. You want to,
so if he plays a quarter and a half, I want to see how he plays tomorrow night. And,
definitely.
And the pass rush is obviously something to look at as well. So that's what I'm looking at. And if Claiborne plays, I'll be watching that a little bit, as B.J. Kissel mentioned. The secondary is still, I think, a concern, no question, especially at corner. maybe Herb Miller can continue to play well, or maybe he's a guy that's just, you know, hit his peak and he won't even be a part of this team very much later on this year. You never know. It happens every year in training camp. Some guy really impresses you, and then he's not even on the team week 12. And then sometimes there's a guy wasn't even in training camp on your team. You acquire him during the regular season, and he ends up being an important contributor to your team or fills in when somebody gets hurt. So I'm more plugged in onto the defense tomorrow night than I am the offense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's I want to see with as many people as possible on that defense, can they get off the field on third down? You know, yes. Like, can they do this? Are they, you know, better equipped with different coverages and different schemes and not doing the same thing every play?
Well, and here's the thing, too.
Every situation is the same.
We're talking about how the starting offenses will probably play more. Now your starting defense is going to have a longer look at the opposing first-team offense.
Yeah.
This will give us a better indication of where the defense and how it's progressed than week one worrying about, oh, goodness, the Bengals went down the field and scored on our first-string defense, but we were missing three starters.
Yeah.
You know, this will give you a little better indication. Even if the defense isn't very good tomorrow night, I'm not going to panic and freak out. I know some people will, but it's preseason.
It's still situations where you're going to be testing different things,
oh, sure.
And you're not showing everything either.
Exactly.
No matter how much they're playing and how long they're out there, the first teamers, they're not going to show a whole lot.
You're not going to see elaborate blitzes and schemes. You're not going to see elaborate play calling. And if you do, that's kind of probably silly unless you really are trying to work on something. Each team does.
Yes, especially with a new coordinator. I mean, you're just not going to do it.
No, I agree with you.
If Bob Sutton was out there, you'd see the same old boring stuff.
And wouldn't
be
just,
I mean, he'd be doing the same thing he's been doing in the regular season, but it wouldn't matter. They're only doing the wrong stuff.
Every time I hear the name Bob Sutton, I cringe.
Yeah.
it's like a curse word in my life. Okay, so college football. Beginning tomorrow night, Miami of Florida against Florida. Florida's ranked in the top 10. I can see Florida losing this game. I think Florida's overranked. I don't think Florida's that good. I think there's three or four teams in the top 10 that aren't all that good, but you got to rank somebody. But Florida and Miami, Florida, and then Hawaii plays Arizona.
Yeah.
Is that right, tomorrow night? Which they don't have that
Honolulu.
On the list here. That'll be Honolulu. What a rough gig that would be to cover in Hawaii football as a play-by-play guy. Darn. Gotta go to work again, hon. Shucks. Miami, Florida, and Florida, that's the marquee game to kick out college football coming up tomorrow night. Now, KU and K-State, their season openers are 8 days away. KU is going to open up against Indiana State. There will be no Puka Williams. He'll be on the sideline, but he's suspended for the first game. And Brian Heaney, the voice of the Jayhawks, was with us yesterday, and he's with us every Thursday during the football and basketball seasons, giving us insight into KU athletics. Thanks to our friends over at Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. Brian was on the show yesterday, and he says the early part of the schedule is key for Kansas to perhaps surprise people and to improve from last year.
I'm like you. I think these first two are of paramount importance. I think Kansas has a great opportunity on a national TV game in week three to go up and shock the world and announce that Les Miles is back. But, as you know, I know that Boston College program pretty well. I was working their bowl game last year that got canceled by weather 9 minutes and 52 seconds into it. So that is a bowl team from a year ago. Even though they only played 10 minutes of a bowl game, they were a bowl team. They lost a couple of studs to the NFL defensively, but they've got a great running back that could play on Sundays and a quarterback, too. And I think that's a really, really tough non-con schedule that you might not realize just glancing at it on paper, but that's a really tough one in week three. And I think these first two are going to challenge folks more so than they realize when it comes to Indiana State and Kansas being a narrow favorite in the opener and the Coastal as well. So, we can't just chalk up 2-1, but I see it the way you see it in terms of where the wins would come from. And then, like I said, I think they win 4 this year, which means of those games most in your wheelhouse you just laid out for us, I think you find a way to pluck off 2 of those. And if that's the case, what a great first season, taking a step forward in a year where not only did you have to implement everything that was new with the new staff and all that, but you were replacing a guy whose name could go up in the Ring of Honor in Joe Dineen, two-time All-American backer, and a guy like Daniel Wise up front on the D-line that was on conference as well. If they could find a way to win 4 games this year, breaking in a new quarterback, a new coach, replacing all that on defense, I think you feel really good about where things were headed and trekking along for Kansas.
And if you missed that interview, it is posted on our podcast page, Sports Ticket, KDCountry94.com. The voice of Jayhawks, Brian Heaney, with us every Thursday throughout the KU athletic sports season. Sorry, I have to go here. So a friend, Don, he gave me some having fun with sporting sayings that coaches or people have said about their football programs. And the last one is, I figure it's a good segue, transition from that to this. How is the Kansas football team like an opossum? They play dead at home and get killed on the road.
Yep.
Les Miles is trying to change that. Beginning next Saturday at 11 a.m. against Indiana State. Pregame at 10:30 on Z96.3 Lake. We talked about it before. We talked about it yesterday. That Dusty thinks KU is going to go 3-9. I think they're going to go 4-8. 5-7, I think, is doable. If things fall right, they've got some of the weaker Big 12 teams with new coaches all coming to Lawrence. So that is a nice scheduling quirk for Kansas. And if they could somehow find a way, and first of all, they got to win their first two against Indiana State and Coastal Carolina for this to be true. They win those first two, which aren't gimmies, according to Brian. At Boston College, sounds like they're better than we think. And then West Virginia, who it seems like it's going to come down to earth this year, Big 12 opener in Lawrence on September 21st. If Kansas gets one of those two, at Boston College or against West Virginia, I'm not talking get both. I'm talking just get one of those two. They're 3-1. All they got to do then is win one game the rest of the year in the Big 12, and they'll exceed that 3-9 mark. Now, that sounds easy, but in the past we know it isn't because KU hardly even wins Big 12 games, period, home or the road. But Baylor isn't what they once were, although they're improving after, you know, falling off the map because of the whole Art Briles situation. Yeah. Oklahoma State, I don't think, is going to be quite as good as they were last year. K-State has got a new coach. Texas Tech has a new coach, and even when they had Kingsbury, they're around, you know, 6-6, 7-5. You know, Oklahoma, Texas are the juggernauts in this conference, it appears. TCU, I don't think they're unbeatable. KU's gone to TCU before with bad teams and had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about West Virginia. So to say that Kansas, you know, 4-8 is sounds like what Brian's thinking, 4-8. They get the 4-8, that's a really good year. I would agree. But I think there's a chance for them to grab a fifth if things fall right. And if they grab a fifth, there's tons of bowl games. They might be bowl eligible, even though they have a losing record of 5-7. And if you get then extended practice time, getting prepared for, you know, the Weed Eater Bowl, whatever the bowl is, it'll be a low-class bowl, I'm sure, whatever.
Yeah.
But you would then have more time to practice, and you got a new coach. And that's another thing that's key for K-State as well, is to make a bowl game so that you get that extra time with some of these younger players, and you're still – kids are transitioning into what the coaches want to do, learning the new system and schemes and terminology and whatever else, and that could bode well for the future if you get that extra practice time in, if you can make a bowl. So is a bowl bid a realistic expectation for KU? I would say it is somewhat. I know people think I might be crazy, but if you only have to get the 5 wins – and there's not enough teams that are 500 or better in the country to fill bowl slots, which there are more and more bowl games. In the past, we've had a few 5-7 teams make it.
Yeah.
You don't think a bowl team would be really interested in having Les Miles on TV? You don't think Les Miles helps sell Kansas as a 5-7 team to get a bowl?
No question.
And I'll bet you KU fans will be all excited to go wherever it is.
Yeah.
Because there'll be people jumping on the wagon going, all right, Les Miles, baby! Woohoo! Orange Bowl, here we come! You know, the people that were not a KU football fan, and then went to the Orange Bowl, and then wore T-shirts, and then were fans. Then who promptly jumped off when they lost 7 in a row.
The only KU after football going shirt 5-0. They've ever owned is an Orange Bowl champion shirt.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Orange Bowl shirt.
Exactly. What I'm saying is the bandwagoners will jump back on if KU goes 5-7, goes to a bowl. People are like, I need to get away. I'll go support the football team. That'll be cool. Let's go down to Louisiana, wherever the bowl game is going to be. I don't care. Get away. We haven't had a bowl game in years. This will be fun. And then they lose. They're 5-8. Does that sound like a great year? No, but it'd be a step in the right direction. So could Kansas get to that point? I think it's possible, but I'm not brave enough to make that prediction. I'm just going to stick with 4-8 because quarterback is still the problem.
Yeah. Hey, listen, 5-8 is way better than the constant 2-10, 3-9 seasons that you've been having.
1-11.
Yeah, 1-11.
0-12 one year.
Is it outstanding? No, but for KU, it's great at that point.
Yes,
if they could do that. So, you know, I don't know what kind of APR they got and things like that. If they would be accepted to a bowl at 5-7 or not, and obviously that plays the first part in it.
True.
And the other part would be the Les Miles thing. If you've got the APR, somebody wants him. Somebody's going to want him at their bowl game, just to promote that part of it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we'd see how all that goes and. listen, it's not out of the realm. People might think we're crazy, but, you know, something goes right for him. I'm never counting anything out as far as the possibility of maybe making a bowl game for KU.
I think they have to start 3-1 to have any chance.
Yeah, they have to do what we're talking about, the 3-1 start. They can't lose.
They can't be
2-2. They definitely can't lose to Indiana State or Coastal Carolina.
They can't be 2-2 after 4 and get the 5, I don't think. So we're in agreement there. Les Miles factor. You know, he moves the needle. I mean, he's in commercials. He was during a national championship game in the playoffs. There's a documentary on Les Miles. It's going to be on ESPN, I think, either tomorrow morning or Sunday morning. And you look at Friday night. They got a marquee game at Boston College, a Friday night, which I don't like, same night as high school football. But it's a showcase for Les Miles and KU. And if they win that game, all of a sudden, they'd be possibly 3-0. And now all of a sudden, ESPN and SportsCenter is going to run with a little bit. Look what Les Miles has done. In 3 weeks, he's matched the win total of David Beatty last year.
Yeah.
And can you imagine all of a sudden the bandwagoners jumping on that wagon to where the axle's going to break? Trust me, it'll happen if they start 3-0. That bandwagon will get really, really large.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah. Okay, so let's shift to K-State. Riley Gates of Go Powercat, GoPowercat.com, our Wildcat Insider, every Tuesday brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty and Beloit Heinke Electric Residential and Service Electric Company. And Riley, we were asking him about the backup quarterback situation. We know K-State's in a better situation with a quarterback. They've got Skylar Thompson. He has experience, and now he doesn't have to look over his shoulder. KU has questions at quarterback until somebody proves himself. But what about the backup quarterback situation for Kansas State? There's a clear-cut starter, but what about number two?
I think it's still probably Nick Ost as of today. It doesn't sound like a whole lot has changed. It didn't look like a whole lot has changed at practice. But, you know, it still feels like 2A and 2B with Nick Ost and John Holcomb. I feel like they're still trying to push Holcomb to figure some things out, to be mentally there. He's physically there, you know. But the quarterback position is not just about your physical capabilities. It's about a whole lot more, as everybody knows. So I think they're just working on getting him to the point where they feel comfortable putting him in that QB2 spot. But as of now, it sounds like it's Nick Ost. And honestly, though, it sounds like it's starting to thin out a little bit in the quarterback room. I mean, with Jaron Lewis there assumingly holding down that fourth spot, they've started to experiment a little bit with Chris Heron, the freshman signing out of Texas, and see if he can play the receiver position. I mean, he's a very athletic kid. He's played quarterback for a few years, but, you know, he was a receiver up until about halfway through his sophomore year of high school. So he has receiver experience, and it sounds like they're really, you know, they want to give him a fair chance at quarterback. If he shows them a lot, they're obviously going to keep him at the position. But he's really started to work with the receivers in practice. He's taken off his green no-contact jersey, and so he seems like he's beginning to make that switch, and I wouldn't be shocked if he makes the full switch here over the next few weeks.
Riley Gates, a Wildcat Insider, every Tuesday on the Sports Ticket. Hear that complete interview at our podcast page, KatieCountry94.com, and the Sports Ticket tab. So, K-State opens up against Nicholls, a team that beat KU in the season opener last year in overtime. Nicholls ranked 11th in the FCS division. Then Bowling Green at home, and then the biggest test in the first 3 weeks, of course, at Mississippi State, a team that I think will probably be ranked at that time. Then they go on the road at Oklahoma State. It's kind of a weird schedule for K-State. They have two home games, and then they're not home until October 5th.
Yeah.
Usually K-State's at home for, seems like, the whole first 2 months of the season, usually, under the regime of Bill Snyder. Now, granted, this was already scheduled before Klieman became the head coach, that they had a home and home with Mississippi State, and then their Big 12 opener is on the road as well. So, backup quarterback situation, some people may be thinking, well, why are we worrying about that? Skylar Thompson's quarterback. But last year he had a concussion. He had a sports hernia he was playing with. He was banged up his freshman year a little bit too. So he's not a guy that's really been able to be durable to play all year long. He hasn't proven that. And we know the way K-State plays, although we'll see how different it is with the new coaching staff, that quarterback gets hit a lot. And whether it is passing or running the football. So that is really important to keep an eye on, and who would be the heir apparent to Skylar Thompson if he's banged up and has to leave a game or miss a considerable amount of time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't care if a guy is prone to injury or not. You've always got to be thinking about that, and you've always got to have an option there at the backup quarterback position. It's just the way it is. Like we were talking earlier, you know, you're not guaranteed the next game, so you don't know what's going to happen. But, yeah, I think that I think it would be a little bit less running probably for Skylar Thompson in this offense, but he's still going to have to run the football, and he's still going to have to, you know, make those decisions on the fly that would force him to run the football in the college game. There's no question about that. So, it is important to have a good backup, and I think they're on their way to getting somebody groomed for that spot. I think they're two good viable options there for K-State if they need them. Obviously don't have the experience that Skylar Thompson has, and nobody would at the backup position. But, yeah, you've got to be prepared for anything to happen at quarterback, any position on the field. You've got to have somebody that can come in and step in and take over that spot.
K-State opener next Saturday at 6 o'clock against Nichols at Bill Snyder Family Stadium there in Manhattan. Nebraska will open up their season on Saturday, August 31st at home against South Alabama. Nebraska last year 4-8, but could have easily been 7-5. 4-8 was their final record. A lot of buzz in Lincoln and across the state of Nebraska with Scott Frost and this football team that maybe, possibly, could win the division in the Big Ten, which means they would go to the Big Ten championship game. And if they do that, that means they're on the radar to possibly the playoff. Are we dreaming? Are we going too fast? Maybe a little bit. But I will say this. I heard Riley say this on Tuesday that, well, I'm kind of surprised Nebraska was ranked despite going 4-8 last year. But if you follow Nebraska very carefully, as we certainly did here on the show, we've had Greg Sharp on before as well, that Nebraska's going in the right direction. They've got the right guy at the helm, a guy that's proven to go from an 0-12 team, take them all the way to an undefeated season in Central Florida. And he's weeded out a lot of the problems on that team. He did not inherit a great situation. I think some people just think, well, Nebraska's always going to be good, so he inherited a good situation. He didn't. Mike Riley didn't do the best job. Neither did his staff. And he came in, and he basically, I think, cleaned house to an extent. He's got a very young and talented quarterback. And so he can do really special things as a sophomore this year. They've got talented skill set position players. I mean, you look at last year, Nebraska scored tons of points, lots of yards. Their defense struggled at times. The offense had turnovers. Some of that was inexperienced quarterback. They also lost a game when their quarterback was out due to injury. So this year, I think, is going to be different. I think Nebraska is a solid team to win 7, maybe 8 games, maybe more. I think Nebraska is taking a huge step in the right direction. But when somebody hasn't watched Nebraska and don't follow them very closely, the first reaction is, how can the 4-8 team be ranked in the top 25? They were only 4-8. But if you watch Nebraska, and we talked about it over and over last year, Nebraska would have smoked Kansas. And Kansas and Nebraska had almost the same record, Kansas 3-9. Nebraska would have beat K-State last year. I'm confident of that. And because I watched them play. And the only way Nebraska would have lost is they beat themselves. Nebraska,
they did. Yeah.
That's the thing. They might have lost to K-State and KU if they beat themselves. But KU, of course, knew how to beat themselves, too.
Yeah, so maybe I don't think that would have happened.
It wouldn't have ended in a tie.
There was times K-State was pretty good at beating themselves as well. So
true.
It would have been enough of a
It might have been an entertaining game of under 500 teams. But Nebraska last year was closer than you think. And I think they're going to take a big step forward. And a lot of times you'll see the biggest progression for a team under a new system, new coaching staff from year one to year two. And that's what you're going to see. I think next year K-State from year one to year two could make a good jump. KU could be very well be the same thing. Build upon the momentum if they have a decent year this year. They're already recruiting really well. K-State, you know, has done a nice job on the recruiting path. And I think, you know, if both KU and K-State would have steps in the right direction this year, I think it's going to bode well for year number two for both those coaching staffs. And last year, Nebraska started out, 0-5, 0-6? But they finished strong and could have easily won a few other games like we talked about. So I don't think their ranking is unreasonable at all. I think they have probably the 24th most talented roster in the country. I don't think that's unreasonable to say. Now it's a matter of can they go out and win games. And they took their lumps and some growing pains last year. And I look for Nebraska to be a very solid football team this season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about what they're going to be like this year, but we do understand what happened last year, and we understand who their coach is, too.
Yeah,
and I think if you have that talent that they're talking about, and that he's kind of gotten rid of the bad apples and things like that, and it's his group.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird to say that in season two, but it really is. Yeah. He's got them playing the way he wants them to play. I can promise you that. And we said it right away. I mean, this team is going to completely turn around with him as a head coach, and Scott Frost is going to take that team to some heights that maybe he can take them to the same heights they were back when he was playing, but I'm not going to guarantee that right now, but they're going to get close to it if they don't get that far.
Well, Jim Harbaugh is not all that at Michigan, okay? Jim Harbaugh gets paid a lot, but he hasn't proven a ton at Michigan other than I can win 9 or 10 games, but I can't win the big games. No, Urban Meyer's not Ohio State anymore. James Franklin gets out-coached in key moments, Penn State. I mean, yeah, I think people just automatically think Nebraska has no chance because Michigan, Ohio State. Michigan isn't – Michigan many times is more overrated than they are underrated.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So I Michigan State sometimes will pop up and be good from time to time too. But I like where Nebraska's going. They got the right guy, and we said that from day one. Okay, baseball, the Royals. Why didn't they just forfeit? Save a lot of time. They spent more time warming up yesterday than the day actually playing. The Royals had the resumption of a suspended game against the Red Sox that picked up in the top of the 10th in a 4-4 tie. It was the Royals' off day, so they go to Boston. It took all of 12 minutes for the Royals to get out of town.
1-1. Line shot down into the corner. That's all the way to the wall. That's a fair ball, and that's a winner. Here comes Owings in to score. And that quickly, the Red Sox win the ball game, 5-4.
Chris Owings plays for the Red Sox. Who knew? He's hitting 133, by the way, this year. He was a leadoff hitter for the Red Sox a couple weeks ago, believe it or not. No wonder the Red Sox aren't going to make the playoffs if Chris Owings was your leadoff hitter for one game, let alone for an extended period of time. But he scores the winning run. Royals lose. Richard Lovelady gets knocked around there in the 10th, and it took all of 12 minutes for the Royals to end up losing. So the Royals will be back in action against the Indians. And Jacob Junis on the hill, he's pitched a lot better lately. And the Indians, of course, battling for the division title with the Minnesota Twins. First pitch at 6:10 tonight at Progressive Field in Cleveland. It is Players Weekend, so they're going to wear the nicknames that they want on their jerseys. Whitley for Wit, and Gordo is going to be worn by Duffy, and Gordon's going to wear Duff Man on his just to confuse people, I guess.
Yeah.
Things like that, although Duffy's still on the IL. So you can see some interesting different uniforms Players Weekend across Major League Baseball this weekend. Les Norman, former Royal, he's a syndicated sports talk show host there in Kansas City, 810 WHB, and he also is a motivational speaker. He was in Beloit a few years ago. Really nice guy. We got to know him, and he's now been a guy that we have on at least a couple times a year to talk Royals baseball. He's always really hospitable. He's easy to get along with, and he makes time for us to have him on the show. And we had him on Wednesday to talk Royals baseball. And I asked him, you know, the Royals right now have a losing record. They're guaranteed a losing season, 45-83. But they are playing a lot of younger guys, trying to figure out some things with, say, a Bubba Starling, a Brett Phillips. What do we got with these guys? What do we got in the bullpen? And I asked Les Norman, what are you, as a former Royal, what are you looking for in the final 35, 36 games of the season?
I want to see young guys step up. I want to see guys like Bubba Starling make adjustments. I'm so for Bubba Starling now becoming an everyday player and not going back to the big leagues. I want to see these guys adjust. I want to see them mature. I mean, because I played and I'm a technician and a coach, I can see little things here and there with a guy's swing, a guy's mechanics on the mound, the way a guy came through a ball on the infield or outfield, throws, cutoff men, all the little things. I just want to see those adjustments because, look, the game is still the game, no matter at what level. At the big league level, obviously, it's just so fast-paced. I just want to see guys continue to make adjustments and not make the same mistakes over and over again. You know, I see a guy like Sparkman who, in one or two or three game stretches, great, and then that fourth or fifth game, everything is over the middle of the plate. And when you keep going back to the well on the negative side, things are just going to snowball on you, and that's been some of the issue for some of these Royals players. And so because I'm a technical guy, I just want to see guys make adjustments because over time, when you mature, they all have the physical part. Over time, though, when you do that, the mental part of the game starts to click. Then you get valuable experience, you learn how to win, and that makes your team come back to the World Series.
Yeah, can't disagree with it. There's a guy that knows baseball, Les Norman. If you missed our full interview, you can go back and listen to it at our podcast center, Sports Ticket at KDCountry94.com. And that really is the key. If the Royals are going to be competitive again in the near future, these younger guys have to develop into consistent players. And right now, you've got a whole bunch of guys that don't seem to be able to figure that out in the bullpen, yeah. Although you like a few of the guys' as potential, but potentials only go so far. You know, Bubba Starling started out really hot. First 12 games, now he's hitting .204. Brett Phillips, is he a guy that can be an everyday player? Is Bubba Starling a guy that can be an everyday player? If those two aren't, Whit Merrifield might be your starting center fielder next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's good.
No, that's not.
And then you might be forced to bring Gordon back, which I'm okay with the Royals turning the page from Gordon. But if they brought him back, I wouldn't be against it because he has had a decent season and he's still really good defensively. But let's be honest, Gordon's not going to be a part of this team the next time they're, you know, vying for a playoff berth, more than likely. So no. I think ideally what you'd want to see is Lopez develop at second, Mondesi stay healthy at short. You're probably going to have, well, ideally, you like to see O'Hearn come through at first, and then Dozier could play third. And then you've got Soler in right, and actually you got Soler as a DH would be ideal because he's not a great outfielder. Witt in right, and then you got to, and then hope Bubba or Brett Phillips end up being your everyday center fielder. But if one of those guys can't do that, now suddenly you might be going to Witt's got to play center, Soler's got to play right. You got Salvi coming back, who you're not going to have him catch 162 games. You need his bat in the lineup. He's going to have to probably play some DH. He might play some first base as well. Chesler Cuthbert, I don't think factors in anymore. He got off to a good start after the Royals had basically let him go. They brought him back. Now he's in an 0 for 40 skid. So that doesn't bode well for him in the future. You know, Bobby Witt Jr., the top draft pick, he's a kid that once he gets up here, maybe in a few years, he might be your third baseman. Modesty's still so young, he might be your third baseman. He might be your center fielder.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the great thing about Whit Merrifield. You can move him around wherever you need him. Can Whit play center? He did in the All-Star game for a couple innings. I don't think that's ideal, though. To me, play left.
Yeah, because who's playing left if Gordon's not there?
Right.
Who's out?
Well, then you go Whit left. If you go Whit left, Soler right. Then you've got, and you don't like Phillips or Starling. You don't think they're everyday center fielder. You know what the Royals are going to have to do? Go find some bargain guy to fill the gap again.
Yeah.
And that's not the way to go, I don't think. But if these guys don't prove themselves, how can you not think that way? Or you bring Gordon back and you put Witt in center. So Royals got a lot of things to figure out. The starting pitching's been better lately, although I still think they need help there. The bullpen definitely needs to get fixed, and they're a long way from fixing that. Seems like a long time ago when the Royals had the best bullpen in baseball. How quickly it changed.
It does.
They got some power in the lineup with Dozier now and Soler, and you still like Witt. Mondesi, I think the next question of Mondesi is, can he stay healthy? Because he's had injury problems the first few years in the bigs. All right. Speaking of baseball, this is a really cool story. During this past offseason, Tim Melville served as a seasonal part-time employee at Little Miss Barbecue in Phoenix. He's a model employee who's loved by coworkers and management, and it sounds like he could have a real future with the company. But he has another job. Tim Melville is a pitcher in the Colorado Rockies organization. He's a starting pitcher. And get this. So during the offseason, he's a part-time employee at a barbecue joint in Phoenix, Arizona. He made his first start of the season Wednesday night in Arizona against the Diamondbacks at Chase Field as a member of the Rockies. All his coworkers are there to cheer him on, even though they're D-back fans, but they're cheering for him. And what'd he do at the age of 29? Pitched 7 innings, gave up 2 hits, 1 run, got his first major league win against the D-backs, 7-2 victory for the Rockies. Guess what? He used to be a Royal. 4th-round pick by the Royals in 2008. He spent the last 11 years bouncing around the baseball world. Most of his time has been spent in the minors, pitching for 7 different organizations. Prior to Wednesday, he'd only spent 35 days in the big leagues and had made just 6 career appearances, which is better than 99.5% of society.
Yeah.
When you make it that long. But
yeah.
But here's the thing. His love for baseball is still strong, but he has a love for barbecue, too. And so that's why he was so eager to spend this past winter working at Little Miss Barbecue. After going to the restaurant's original location for years, he found out that they were opening a second location less than 15 miles away. So he decided, I want to be a part of it. He said, and I quote, "A lot of guys play golf in the afternoons in the off season. I was just like tired of that. I fortunately live close to one of the top barbecue places in the country, and I'm a big food guy. They let me do an interview process. I kind of told them my resume of 10 years of Major League Baseball. I had some cooking experience, so they let me get on board." He ultimately got the job, wasted no time in working his tail off. He helped to get the new location ready for opening in Arizona. And once they're ready for business, Melville was a utility man. He worked the register, he was a busboy, a dishwasher, he even helped in the kitchen and in the barbecue pits. As a foodie, Melville says he just wanted to get involved and be around the scene, treating the gig as somewhat of an internship. The free barbecue certainly didn't hurt. He liked that as well. But his full-time job is pitching for the Colorado Rockies, and thus his first big league win came in Arizona, where he works in the off season at a barbecue joint. How cool a story is
yeah,
that?
It is. It's yeah. You can't script it any better for a guy like him. You know, like I go back to Arizona and I get my first win in front of all my barbecue buddies and
free barbecue for everyone after the win in the clubhouse.
He should probably be paying for it for them since they had to watch him beat the Diamondbacks.
True.
So he's probably on the hook for all those employees that went out to watch him for sure.
Or the organization took care of it, the Rockies did possibly too, because that happens from time to time. You know, they got an allotment of tickets and it wasn't sold out, I'm sure. Just to give you an idea of what happens on the internet when you need the fill time, there's an article on CBS Sports, and I'm not even going to click on it because it's ridiculous, predicting Pro Bowl starters. Who cares about the Pro Bowl at any time?
Who cares?
But who cares about who's going to start?
When they actually announce the starters,
I don't even care then.
I don't care. I announce the Chiefs if they make it because it's our job. But I don't get in depth on the who, what.
Jared Dubin, whatever you're getting paid, they got to pay you more, and you got to come up with some different stuff. Jared Dubin is a writer of CBSSports.com. It's an 8-minute read, it says. Le'Veon Bell returns the glory. Patrick Mahomes has another huge season, predicting the AFC Pro Bowl starters. Why don't we just start predicting the 2022 Major League Baseball All-Star team? Why not? Never too early to start predicting.
I've never seen anything like that before.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, you always have the way too early predictions.
Way too early top 25 for football, college football, college
basketball.
Probably,
way too early Super Bowl predictions and things like Pro Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Pro
Bowl? A game that some people say should be eliminated? Okay. All right, we're getting the show with this since it's a Friday. Since football, college football is back starting tomorrow night, Miami of Florida against Florida. And last weekend was the last weekend without college football or football in general for the most part, but college football until what? Will be January?
Yeah, January 8th or when,
something like that.
Something like that.
All right, so my friend Don, he gave me these quotes that some people have talked about when it comes to football. Some of these are from coaches, and I told you the KU football one. And ladies and gentlemen, if you missed it, and if you're a KU football fan, you're like, please don't repeat it. But if you're a K-State fan and other fans out there, you might like it. How is the Kansas football team like an opossum? They play dead at home and get killed on the road. That's still funny the second time I said it. Here's some others here that you might like. Eric Russell said, and I quote, "At Georgia Southern, we don't cheat. That costs money, and we don't have any of that." let's see. Frank Lehigh, Notre Dame, a school without football is in danger of deteriorating into a medieval study hall. Bob Delaney of Nebraska said, "I don't expect to win enough games to be put on NCAA probation. I just want to win enough to warrant an investigation." let's see. Alex Karras, he's a Hall of Famer. He also ended up being an actor. He was in Blazing Saddles. Uh-huh. He said, "I never graduated from Iowa, but I was only there for two terms, Truman's and Eisenhower's." Bowden Wyatt of Tennessee, "My advice to defensive players is to take the shortest route to the ball and arrive in a bad humor." Duffy Doherty said, "I could have been a Rhodes Scholar except for my grades."
Yeah.
let's see. Duffy Doherty of Michigan State, "Football is not a contact sport. It is a collision sport. Dancing is a contact sport." After USC lost 51-0 to Notre Dame, John McKay's postgame message to his team was, "All those who need showers, take them."
Yeah.
Basically saying,
"You guys didn't really put in a lot of work today."
Exactly. If lessons are learned in defeat, our team is getting one whale of an education. That's from Murray Warmoth of Minnesota. Newt Rockne of Notre Dame was quoted as saying, "The only qualifications for a lineman are to be big and dumb. To be a back, you just have to be dumb." Whoa.
Yikes. Newt, man. I don't think they'd say that this day and age.
No. Newt also said, "I found that prayers work best when you have big players." This is a good one. Ohio State's Urban Meyer on one of his players. "He doesn't know the meaning of the word fear. In fact, I just saw his grades, and he doesn't know the meaning of a lot of words." Oh, my. And how do you get a former Illinois football player off your porch? Pay him for the
pizza. Pay him for the pizza.
There you go. You can put in any school there if you want.
I've heard that one a lot of times.
Yeah, that's a good one. I figure that's a good one to end on. All right, folks. Have a great weekend. Enjoy a little bit of college football that's out there. Chiefs tomorrow night, preseason, game number 3. Last time to see Mahomes in the preseason, more than likely, and some of the other starters. Chiefs 49ers from Arrowhead. Pregame at 6. Kickoff at 7. You hear it on the home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas. Our sister station, Z96.3 Lake. Have a great weekend.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.